Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to the Bugle Ashes Zoltzcast preview of the final day of the final Ashes series of 2023. I am Andy Zoltzman, ready to pick up my coloured pens for the final time this test summer with the match and series delicately poised as it has been since, I don't know, about 6 months before it began. Australia 135 for naught, chasing a historically mammoth 384 to win. So they need another 249. England need 10 wickets. The rain needs to, in colloquial terms, right off for the day and not spoil things again. It could be a classic day of Test cricket or a day of unending frustration, particularly if you want England to win. I would say Australia are slight favourites. Crickviz's WinViz predictor disagrees with me. They have England with a slight edge. If it was naught for naught chasing 249, it wouldn't seem like a particularly big chase. But as soon as it gets above 350, everyone thinks, oh, that doesn't happen very often, even though it does happen quite a lot more often than it used to. So here we are, the last day of the series. Joining me to look ahead, once again, producer Chris. Chris, it was another day of soggy frustration yesterday, and another day in which the series didn't do what we expected it to do. We had the emotional scene of Stuart Broad marching out for his last test innings, taking a series of agricultural swipes, which is essentially what he's done for about the last 10 years batting after starting his career, being compared by none other than Geoffrey Boycott to the young Garfield Sobers. I think you could write about a 500-page book about Stuart Broad's test batting career. Yep. But anyway, he finished it with a six off his last ball. Benedict, the Sky statistician, tweeted that he's the only player, other than West Indies Wayne Daniel, to hit the last ball of his test career for six. Quite hard to dig around the numbers and confirm that. And then we had 38 overs before the rain intervened in spectacular style, in which you would have thought, you know, on a cloudy day, ideal conditions, ostensibly for swing and seam bowling, absolutely nothing happened. The ball did almost nothing. Australia batted with, purpose and precision in a way they haven't always done through this series, and they put themselves in a winning position. What did you make of it all, Chris?
So that's roughly 200 balls, so perhaps that could be 100 on either side. There was swiping for sixes. There was a packed oval. The excitement is building. It's time for the 100, Andy. That's what it's telling me.
There are quite a lot more dot balls than you get in the odd, the average 100 max. I think if you had I think we had 141 runs in those 200, just over 200 balls. So, I mean, that's a 100 game in which, you know, 70 plays 70. I mean, that would be a classic.
What a game.
Or if it was 70 for one against 70 for naught, everyone would think, what the hell's going on? Yeah, but also, I mean, this was an interesting thing about that partnership. I think I might have mentioned it on the show earlier in the series that prior to that, there had not been a single partnership in the entire 4 3/4 test we'd had so far of more than 200 balls. And then suddenly Warner and Khawaja in the last innings of the series, probably both of their last tests in England, suddenly bat for hours and hours.
So I guess it would be good then to focus on how England are doomed, and then maybe we can switch that in the second half. Yeah. It felt for me at its most ominous when Khawaja ticked over to become the series top scorer. So 400 and what is he on now?
He's on 493 now. He's overtaken Crawley's, surprisingly impressive 480. He's going to end up the series top scorer unless Travis Head or Steve Smith comes in and smashes a rapid 170-plus. As we talked about before, he's had a really good series, but without, you know, he didn't get to have a 50 in five innings in a row in the middle of that sequence in the third, fourth, and the first innings of this fifth test. But he has proved obdurate in every game. 1,248 balls, Chris, he has now faced in the entire series, which feels like more than the entire England side has faced in the entire series. It isn't, but it feels that way. It's the most balls faced in a series in England by any batter since Rahul Dravid of India in 2002, who faced 1,335 balls in just four tests in a run-drenched summer. 1,335 balls of silken, elegant defiance. It's the most by an opener in a series in England since Mike Atherton lasted for 1,435 against South Africa in 1998, a series I personally remember for taking an entire week off work. In the 1 year of my life, I had an actual job just around the corner from where you work now at something else. And I went up to Manchester to stay with my now wife, and we sat watching Gary Kirsten score the world's dullest double century over 11 hours of absolutely pointless tedium. But our relationship survived that. And if a relationship can survive a Gary Kirsten double hundred, it can survive anything that life throws at it. So 25 years later, we're still going strong. And it's the most balls faced for Australia in the series in England since David Boone faced 1,334 balls in the sixth Test Ashes of 1993. So he has been extraordinary, particularly when you look at him and indeed Warner and Crawley and Duckett in the context of recent Ashes series in which openers have just been dispatched. Yeah. The last series in Australia... and in England, the opening partnerships averaged, I think it was about 19 in Australia last time for both sides combined, and 12 in 2019. So we've seen, and that ties in with that theme of the series, the ball's not doing a lot. And that's made it easier for the openers. And it's been sort of unfamiliar, for having watched cricket in England over recent years, not to see early wickets falling all the time. And yesterday, England found less movement through the air and off the pitch combined than in any other day of the series in which they've bowled more than 10 overs. So that it really blunted England, even though the skies look like they should help. These balls are... I mean, there's been weird sessions where it suddenly started swinging more or nibbled a bit more, not more in the air than off the pitch, and England will need that today, or it's going to be very hard to take 10 wickets.
Is part of the problem, Andy, you say opening... batsmen are getting partnerships. That means opening bowlers aren't getting wickets. So what does that say about Jimmy Anderson then, who didn't have the best birthday celebration yesterday? I thought he looked actually okay, but still no sign of a wicket for him.
Yes, it's a bit of a mystery with Anderson. And we, you know, we've been looking at his data through the series and his speeds. Almost identical to last year. The amount of swing he's getting is almost identical to last year, and you know, less seam movement in common with all the other bowlers. So it's not obvious why he's done so much worse than he did last year when he took 27 wickets, average 0.3, or I'm rounding it down from something below, anything below 20, I'll round down to 0.3. But he was, you know, there's not a huge difference in what he's been doing in terms of, you know, speed and swing, but it's just not worked for him. And Australia have been playing him largely with a degree of comfort. He's not taken more than one wicket in any innings so far. In fact, I think his last eight Test innings, he's not taken more than one wicket, having taken 45 wickets at 17 in the first 10 Tests that he played under the basbalistic regime. So it's... yeah, it's a worry for England. It's been, you know, something that has been quite crucial in the series, that he's kept control as he always does, but Australia have not been overly troubled by him.
More bad news for England. Moeen, particularly when he first came onto bowl, looked quite injured. That was a very village run up, and Mark Wood was only given three overs, which is apparently tactical, which I don't know, like maybe tactics is something I will never understand, but they, or certainly Wood's got to bowl a lot today, hasn't he?
Well, you'd think that. They say they said after play that he wasn't injured. They were asked about that in the press conference by some of the various hacks stroke investigative journalists who write about cricket. And England said there was nothing wrong with him, that it was tactical. I wonder whether we've seen with Wood through his career that he's a sort of mixture of durable and fragile, in that, you know, when he plays, he will just bowl as fast as possible for as long as possible. So in that last series in Australia, I remember seeing one of his, I think it was his fifth spell of a day, and he was averaging over 90 miles an hour. So when he's playing, he's got, you know, amazing stamina, but obviously he has that history of getting injured. And I wonder if England thought, we can only get X overs out of Mark Wood across this innings. We need to target them as precisely as possible. So he didn't bowl until, he was the sixth bowler used. Yeah, was it 33rd over or something, you said, that he came and had my scorecard in front of me. So I wonder if they thought, well, we need to wait till maybe the ball started reverse swinging. Some of the balls in this game seem to have moved more the older they've got. And as one of the many things that will defy all explanation as when historians come to relook at this series in 2,500 years' time. So I wonder if they were waiting for it to start doing something, or waiting for a wicket to fall and unleash him on the new player. I think those are the explanations that I could come up with. But it was a bit odd that the man who's changed the series, really, when he came in and gave England that pyrotechnic new bowling weapon at Headingley, has only bowled a few overs. But Australia, I mean, he caused a few problems, but Australia looked a little more comfortable against him than they had previously, partly, as I said, because that ball was doing less.
I wonder if it's doing more later on both sides, because better bowlers are coming on who are changed bowlers. But that's just a small theory.
It's possible, yeah.
Before we talk about why England are clearly going to win the game, Australia still do have Marnus and Smith and Head and a doughty tail to come, don't they?
They do, and they've looked very rattled a lot throughout this series in patches, and then managed to rally and provide defiance. It's happened in almost every test, actually, that they've sort of looked like they were about to, you know, on the ropes. They've basically played cricketing rope-a-dope. We saw that in Manchester, although it was obviously they were helped by the rain. On that fourth day, they did bat for 30-odd overs and only lose one wicket. Labuschagne and Mitchell Marsh dug in. We've seen it various times during the series, Ashes deciding partnership between Cummins and Lyon in the first test, when it looked like they were about to lose. So they have, the target is now within sight. If it rains today and they, you know, end up with only 60 overs to bat or whatever, that 249 runs to win, that is an achievable task. So they have this focus, but they also will have the weight of history on them, and the nerves of, you know, being so close to achieving what they set out to achieve and what they've looked like they weren't going to achieve at various points in the series. So I guess that's what's made this whole series fascinating. The possibilities at the start of each day, each session, each hour, each over. It's felt like most of the time the game could swing either way. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they've got a lot of players. We talked a lot about Steve Smith's appalling fourth innings record. His even more appalling recent record in all second innings for Australia hasn't reached past 35 in almost 2 years now in the second innings. So, yeah, there's... you're crossing your fingers there.
Fingers crossed for that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's... they're in a good... They're in a surprisingly good position. When England were 330 for four, 320-odd ahead, crashing it everywhere, they looked completely out of the game. And then England rather frittered away their last six wickets. And here we are with Australia, probably with the edge.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so enough talking like English people. Let's talk now about why England will win. And England rarely have two bad days, do they? They're like, normally when they've got themselves into a funky position, not just in this season, but since S&M cricket began, they tend to come back quite strong, don't they?
They do, and as we talked about a lot, they tend to find ways of taking wickets. But, I mean, that was about as unwickety a day as they've had, I think, since Stokes was being captain in the field yesterday. So that was slightly ominous. And I guess it's, you know, we talk about Australia having an achievable target. So do England. They know that, you know, they've not got another Test match till January now. So for those who don't play in the White Ball World Cup, it's, you know, they've just got this one day to get through for Stuart Broad, the last day of his Test career. So who knows? That Stokes was bowling before play yesterday, so I mean, it could be set up for him to come on and hack his body to pieces one last time. Who knows? It's set up very quite similarly to the Oval Test of 1993, albeit the series situation was different in that England had been absolutely hammered for the first five tests. They were 4-0 down. Mike Atherton, which was the second, or it was the first summer, he took over as captain halfway through that series from Gooch, and England bowled Australia out. They began the day no wickets down, and England bowled them out to win their first Ashes Test win in 6.5 years. And three harrowing winless series up to that point. So it's set up very similar to that. It's one of the first days of Test cricket I went to live. And they had two wickets in the first over, then Slater and Boone, who both had great series, were out. So England could do with something like that. I think if they get a good start, then, you know, the fatigue and the flatness of the pitch yesterday will hopefully dissipate into the South London gloom.
Well, speaking obviously as a statistician and not as a gambler in Last Chance Saloon, Jimmy's luck's going to come in, obviously, finally. Mark Wood is feeling fresh and rested. And Joe Root was turning it a mile yesterday. You say there was limited movement for the seamers, but actually spinning the ball, as was proved by Todd Murphy, seems to have got like a bit more of an effective weapon in the last day or so.
Yes, and it's such a shame for England that Moeen Ali is not fully fit. He was, as you say, he was extremely ginger in the field after his groin strain batting earlier in the game. He'd got a really good fourth innings record for England. And so, you know, when the pitch is turning and getting a bit older through his career, he's done some really great things for England, including he got a hat-trick at the Oval against South Africa 2017, or to bowl them to victory at Lords in that series with 10 wickets in the match, 6 in the second inning. So a fully fit Moeen Ali, I think, would totally change the equation of this, because he's a bowler who, although he's never been a kind of consistent spinner who drops it in the same spot, he's always spun it quite hard and got decent players out, and particularly, as I said, in fourth innings. So Root's, you know, a really decent backup spinner. And you'd expect him to get two or three wickets today, maybe, if he bowls a lot. But whether he's quite good enough to spin England to victory on a fifth day pitch, like Derek Underwood in 68 after the rain, and the crowd mopped up the outfield with their blankets and their jackets and whatever, just rolling around trying to osmose water into their bodies to give England a chance to win that game. I'm not sure he can quite do that. But, you know, if he can chip in, if Moeen can get is fit enough to spin a few balls hard, then that could be quite a factor.
Right, Andy. Well, I am feeling positively enthused and excited. I'm pretty confident that we're going to get one of four results today.
That's, Chris, is the kind of punditry that we've come to expect, not just from you, but from all cricket pundits. I think England's going to get a result today, certainly. It's just that result might be a loss. Or a draw, or a tie.
I'd love it.
I mean, although England wouldn't share the series if it was a tie, it's one of my main hopes in life is that at some point in my ludicrous life, in which I get paid to watch cricket, I see a tied Test match. And we've had a few very near ones recently. The one run defeat in New Zealand recently, although I wasn't actually there. But I'd love to see a tied Test.
Yep.
And 248 more runs, 10 more wickets. Ah, what a way to end the summer that would be. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think if the weather stays off, either Australia or England will win. Can I say that? Can I say 98? It's not going to be a draw. 200. Even Australia can't bat as negatively if it's 98 overs, not to score 249 in the day. Well, that concludes today's Bugle Ashes Zoltzcast with that extremely rigorous prediction of what's going to happen. We will have a quick series wrap up at some point in the next few days. Don't forget to listen to all the stuff from the Bugle stable. The Bugle is currently on hiatus, but there's plenty of content from the Bugle and the other shows in the stable, including The Gargle with Alice Fraser, all available at thebuglepodcast.com. Good luck to cricket in general for this final day of what has been an absolutely captivating series. Until then, may the cricket be with you. Amen.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.